if you must.
Hello, operator?
Hide if you can. Scream if you are able, but above all, if you are alone, don't answer the phone.
I killed Mom.
Don't answer the phone. Rated R.
TV commercials like that one, exploiting the plight of women in danger, those ads have been saturating television for the past 2 years. And the summer and fall of 1980 are the worst yet. They signify a disturbing new trend at the movie box office, one we'll be discussing on this special edition of Sneak Previews. Across the aisle from me is Gene Siskel, film critic of the Chicago Tribune.
And this is Roger Ebert, film critic of the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, normally on Sneak Previews, Roger and I review new movies. This week, however, we're going to be looking at a group of recent films that have some very ugly things in common. All of these films are thrillers featuring extreme violence directed at young women. To put it bluntly, what you see in most of these films is a lot of teenage girls being raped or stabbed to death, usually both. This is a depressing development in American movies, and on this show, we'll examine the nature of this trend and then speculate on why we're getting so many of these films and getting them now. A lot of moviegoers, adults and teenagers, both go to see these R-rated films, and they assume, well, they're just going to see a bunch of routine, scary pictures. But oftentimes, they're really shocked how awful these films are. As we explore this trend, we will not be showing you extreme violence in these movies. We've picked scenes that only suggest the violence. We want to inform you, not offend you.
It's just as well we're not showing some of those scenes. I think people would turn their sets off.
Yes.
To begin with, one of the things these so-called women in danger films all have in common is that they portray women as helpless victims. And after you've sat through a dozen or so of these films, as Gene and I have unfortunately had to, they all fall into the same pattern. A woman or a young girl is shown alone, isolated, and defenseless. And then come suspense-building scenes where the girl thinks she's about to be attacked, but she isn't. And then, just when you think everything's going to be okay and nothing's going to happen, a crazy killer springs out of the shadows and attacks her, and frequently the killer sadistically threatens the victim before he strikes. That's what's happening in this scene from last year's sleazy movie, When a Stranger Calls, which has now been re-released because of the recent upsurge of the popularity of these films about attacks on women. In this scene, that woman's been told to keep the caller on the line who's been threatening her until the police can trace the call.
Hello.
It's me.
I know. Who are you? I'm not going to be here much longer. Dr. Mandrakis and his wife are coming home.
I know.
Can you see me?
Yes.
You don't know who I am or where I live. And Dr. Mandrakis will take me home, or maybe even the police.
I've called the police.
I want to talk to you.
It's coming from inside the house. Our squad car's going over there right now. Just get out of that house.
That basic scene has provided the premise for at least a dozen films in the last year. It's always the same. The girl is at home alone, the menacing attacker, the ringing telephone, the wide, frightened eyes. I think there's something terribly wrong when an image like that becomes the building block of an entire movie genre.
You know, a lot of people think that the battle has been won in Hollywood on films about women. They think that now women have parity with men, that there's strong women images in the films, Jill Clayburgh and an unmarried woman, Jane Fonda, and every picture she makes. Got it all wrong. Fonda and Clayburgh make one film a year, maybe, right? These films are coming out week after week, playing to millions of people, and the dominant image in American films today on women is not Fonda and Clayburgh. It's women like that, cowering in the corner, knives being brandished in their faces, being raped, being sliced apart. That's what's going on in American movies. That's why we're doing this show.
I think a lot of people have the wrong idea. They identify these films with earlier thrillers like Psycho or even a more recent film like Halloween, which we both liked. These films aren't in the same category. These films hate women.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the audiences that go to them don't seem to like women too much either. Now, we go to see these films in movie theaters. These are not the kinds of movies where they have nice private little screenings for the critics. And to sit there surrounded by people who are identifying not with the victim, but with the attacker, with the killer, who are cheering these killers on, is a very scary experience.
Yeah, the movies are played so that they really are in favor almost of the killer and really against the women cowering back. I don't think we can stress this too strongly, that we're not talking about just a couple of films. It seems like we're getting new ones of these kind of films every other week. That amounts to a major movie trend. Here are some examples. There's Prom Night, with teenage girls being slaughtered at their high school prom. The ad campaign is, if you're not back by midnight, you won't be coming home. There's Don't Go in the House. A guy who was tortured by his mother burns three women to death. The cell line here is, you have been warned. And there's The Howling, a new movie about a woman who goes alone on a vacation and is tortured by the locals. The come on line here is, imagine your worst fear a reality. And there's Terror Train, in which six college students at a masquerade party on a train are stalked by a psychopath. And there's The Boogeyman. A supernatural killer haunts a house. Here's one of the ads for The Boogeyman.
You can't hide from him. By the time they believe in him, it'll be too late. The Boogeyman. He's going to get you.
And we're out to get the Boogeyman before he gets you and your $4. Now, week after week, these are the kinds of movies we're getting. It is relentless. Every film company seems to be making one of these movies or distributing one that some fast buck artist has already made. In addition to the films we've already mentioned this season, we also have He Knows You Are Alone, Motel Hell, Phobia, Mother's Day, Schizoid, Silent Scream, and I Spit on Your Grave, which is easily the worst of this disgusting bunch. The newspaper ads for these films are bold in the way they suggest terror, but in no way, in many cases, do the ads really prepare you for the kind of explicit violence we end up getting on the screen. Decapitations are not uncommon, and shots, repeated stabbing shots of all parts of women's bodies, are grotesquely routine.
You know what I think misleads a lot of people when they look at the newspaper ads or ads on television for these movies? They see that R rating and they think, well, R, that means if you're under 17, you have to take along a parent or an adult guardian. It can't be that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've seen other R-rated films, like this summer you had The Blue Lagoon and had a little low-key nudity in it, or The Blues Brothers, which really wasn't too extreme. And so they say, well, that's not so bad. They have no idea. I agree with you about I Spit on Your Grave. That is the most violent, extreme, grotesque, nauseating R-rated picture I've ever seen, and I just don't understand how the R rating has grown so large as to include these films, which in my opinion go right off the map of any kind of good taste.
Yeah, what's happening is these gougings, again, to make the point, are taking place, and they're basically women that are being gouged. I think at this point somebody is probably wondering why.
Why exactly?
Now? Why is this happening? I have a theory. In the last couple of months I've been seeing these pictures, I'm convinced it has something to do with the growth of the women's movement in America in the last decade. I think that these films are some sort of primordial response by some very sick people of men saying, get back in your place, women. These women in the films are typically portrayed as independent, as sexual, as enjoying life, and the killer typically, not all the time, but most often, is a man who is sexually frustrated with these new aggressive women. And so he strikes back at them. He throws knives at them. He can't deal with them. He cuts them up. He kills them. Get back in your place. It's against the women's movement.
I think you're basically right, Gene. You know, after you've sat through hour after hour of this complete trash, you begin to ask yourself, what did these female victims do to deserve the horrible attacks they undergo in these films? What was their crime? Why is it suddenly open season on young women in the movies? Well, one thing that most of the women victims do have is in common is that they do act independently, and I agree with you on that point. Mm-hmm. To one degree or another, there are liberated women who choose to act on their own, and the moment that a woman starts making decisions for herself in these movies, you can almost bet she's going to end up paying with her life, and horribly. Here's an example from a movie, Silent Scream, with a college co-ed looking for off-campus housing.
Listen, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I've had a rotten day and I really need a room.
So do I.
I'm not a violent person by nature, but if there's a room here, I'm ready to fight for it.
Why fight? We can always share it.
This aggressive woman gets a room all right, but she also gets beaten, gagged, tied up in a closet, and attacked with a knife. And in the movie Friday the 13th, an independent female camp counselor goes out on her own and hitchhikes a ride with the wrong driver.
Hi, I'm going to Camp Crystal Lake. Guess I always wanted to work with children. I hate when people call them kids. Sounds like little goats. But when you've had a dream as long as I have, you'll do anything. Hey, wasn't that the road up for Camp Crystal Lake back there? I think we better stop.
Now that scene demonstrates a very common and probably very significant technique that's used again and again in these films. We view a scene through the eyes of the killer. Mm-hmm. You never saw the driver in that last scene. Instead, you saw everything through the driver's eyes. Now in the traditional horror movie, we often saw things from the victim's point of view, but that's no longer. Now we look through the killer's eyes. It's almost as if the audience is being asked to identify with the attackers in these movies, and that really bothers me.
That's a very good point. One other thing that bothers me is that the behavior that these women are engaging in, if done by men, would be considered brave, bold, and fun. Mm-hmm. Going hitchhiking, you know, going across the country like an easy rider, very typical. A woman tries to do something like that in these films, whammo, they get sliced up. And again, I want to expand on this notion of what may be causing this. Whenever we see a movie trend, I think that what's really going on,
urges or feelings or fears that they don't articulate themselves, and then a movie comes along, sometimes almost by accident, that strikes that chord. For example, when Airport came out in 1970, nobody knew that was going to be the first of countless umpteen dozens of disaster movies, but it really spoke to people in a way that made other people imitate it. And I think in this case, the first movie of this whole series of Women in Danger films was obviously Halloween, which I think, and we're going to get to Halloween in just a moment, I think it's a pretty good picture, but it captured an enormous audience. It did millions of dollars worth of business, and then the sleaze merchants who came along looked at that movie and tried to put their finger on what it was about it that was so successful, and they said, well, women being chased by a killer, that's it. Mm-hmm. Let's go out and hire us some more women and some more killers and make us some money.
That's why they call these things exploitation films, these rotten ones, because they exploit one element and make it sort of sick. Mm-hmm. Also, many of the attacks in these films take on women who are scantily clad. And I think that the intent here is to also exploit the sex angle in these pictures. The nudity is always gratuitous. It's just put in the film only to titillate the audience and maybe make one other point, that women who dress this way or merely uncover their bodies are somehow asking for trouble and somehow deserve the trouble they get. That's a very sick idea. Here, for example, is an innocent sunbather, and I spit on your grave. Watch what happens to her. And in Friday the 13th, we watch as a young woman primps provocatively in a bathroom mirror as she is stalked by a hatchet killer. This is yet another film connecting sex with violence. A film saying, act this way, young women, and you're asking for trouble.
Hello?
In the past year, I must have seen that scene 100, 150 times. Every movie of this kind has 8 or 10 scenes just like that. I am sick of them. I dread going to these kinds of movies. It really has become the most depressing part of my job as a film critic.
And there we are in total agreement, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we go to see these movies, and in a way, I almost feel as if I don't belong in the theater, because everybody else apparently went to these movies like this, voluntarily. They're happy to be there. They're reacting. I feel like an undercover spy in the dark. I went to see I Spit on Your Grave, and I was sitting next to a fairly nicely dressed, middle-aged man, maybe in his 50s or 60s, who was talking back to the screen with lines like, boy, she's really asking for it now, or, you know, there's a rape scene coming up, this will be a good one, and so forth. This guy is, to my way of thinking, a vicarious sex criminal. He has very antisocial attitudes. I felt creepy sitting there.
Not all of the guys, I went and saw the picture too, and I saw a lot of couples on dates. And that gets me worried about another thing. I know a lot of people are wondering, well, you know, people are going to see this film and imitate the behavior. Some people may. I don't know. But the majority of middle-class people are going to see these films. That's why they're such big hits. And I worry then about this idea, which is that when you view women constantly as sport, being stabbed, I think that's a sort of a sick notion that just sort of makes us, it's degrading. You view them as second class, that somehow this is acceptable behavior. You've said before that all movies tend to argue in favor of the behavior that they show.
Mm-hmm.
These are women as sport to be stabbed. I think that's a bad idea. You know, they outlawed bullfighting because it was cruel. I almost have some of the same feeling toward these kinds of films.
These kinds of movies put some very bad ideas in society in the context of entertainment.
So.
Yes. You know, Gene and I had some long discussions before we decided to do this special program on women in danger in the movies. And frankly, we worried about whether additional publicity for these movies might simply help them out at the box office. We sure hope not. Our intention is to simply report on this trend and to warn unsuspecting people who might go to these films thinking they're merely good, old-fashioned horror films, the kind a lot of people used to enjoy. Because there is a difference between good and scary movies and movies that systematically demean half the human race. There is a difference between movies which are violent but entertaining and movies that are gruesome and despicable. There is a difference between a horror movie and a freak show. And a good example of that is the fact that both of us gave favorable reviews to a very scary 1978 horror film named Halloween. Now, there must be people asking, how could we praise a movie like that and now say these other movies are so terrible? Well, here's a scene from Halloween. It's got the same basic situation as all the Women in Danger movies have. There's a woman alone in a big house. She's being chased by a killer. But let's look at it first and then talk about some of the differences.
I'm going to take a little walk.
Is it the boogeyman? I'm scared.
There's nothing to be scared of.
Are you sure? How?
I killed him.
You can't kill the boogeyman.
Okay, that's Halloween, a horror movie we both think is pretty good.
Very good.
Yeah. One of the things a short scene can't show you is that Halloween is directed and acted with a great deal more artistry and craftsmanship than the sleazebucket movies we've been talking about. But there's another much more important difference. As you watch Halloween, your basic sympathies are always enlisted on the side of the woman, not with the killer. Mm-hmm. The movie develops its women characters as independent, intelligent, spunky and interesting people. Halloween does not hate women.
Yeah, you know, when I saw that scene, I must admit, I wasn't really worrying about the woman as much as I was placing myself in that closet and thinking about that killer, how I would handle it.
Uh-huh.
And I was also appreciating the fact that I think Halloween not only doesn't hate women,
mm-hmm.
but it loves film and filmmaking. That music is just fabulous. The way he starts one theme, then lays another thing on top of it, keeping the other theme, really good. Also, the light coming through the slats in that
mm-hmm.
closet.
Mm-hmm.
This is a film that's sort of up. That scene is up, and you're jumpy, rather than getting depressed and feeling sorry mm-hmm. and feeling sorry that you're even watching it. An upbeat thing.
You know, I think what you're touching on here is that artistry can redeem any subject matter.
Sure.
That's why I've always been opposed to censorship. I don't
mm-hmm.
believe any subject matter should be off base.
Right.
The question is, what does the artist do with it? How does he look at it? How does he put it through his art in order to make a statement about it, in order to make it into either a commercial film or a serious film? I believe that in the case of a movie like Halloween, we can engage in that joy of filmmaking that you talk about. That's not the case with the other films that really address themselves to the lowest possible common denominator.
So we're not knocking scary pictures,
no,
per se, just a certain kind. And just to make the point one final time, differentiate the films we're talking about from something good like Halloween, the films that we're dealing with here don't have the artistry of Halloween. These Women in Danger films all really boil down to just one same image, one disturbing image, a woman screaming in abject terror. That's really the degrading essence of what's going on in these pictures, and in that one they even slow it down in slow motion. That's all that's about, is just that sick image of the woman cowering in a corner. As to what people can do about these films, this trend in the movies that we've been spotlighting, I think that people have to realize that the box office speaks louder than just two film critics. So if one of these films is around, if you have an idea that it might be around, stay away.
Right, and how do you know which films to stay away from? Usually you can tell by the ads. R-rated, usually has a knife or a hatchet or an axe, a girl screaming, some guy in a hood.
Yes.
These movies are junk. Give them a pass.
Okay, so much for this week's journey into sick movies. Next week, the films have to get better. How can they be any worse? Next time, we'll review five new films on Sneak Previews. Until then, we'll see you at the movies.